How does one stay in balance when all of your brain activity tends to lean in one direction? Generally speaking, some may consider me only a left brain thinker. You know, a person that tends to look at the world both logically and analytically. Generally speaking, there is some truth to that. However, I do understand the importance of living a balanced life, and that includes using the other half of my brain. You know, the creative side that flourishes with dealing with complexities, ambiguity, and paradox. Oftentimes, when I am besieged with a complicated matter that requires taxing mental energy and thought, I must remind myself to switch back and forth between cortexes, thinking, then creating, then thinking again. Writing helps, but so does listening to music, taking long walks with the dog, or even playing in my garden. Sometimes I even seek out new challenges in hopes that conquering them will provide me with both insight and inspiration. That's what happened last fall when I purchased a sewing machine off of Craigslist and decided to take up sewing. I have always wanted to learn to sew, but only decided to do so as a form of distraction from thinking, rethinking, and overthinking. Luckily for me, I had an outlet right here in the community to explore my new creative diversion. Now in its 28th year, Mount Airy Learning Tree, or MALT as it is known locally, offers 250 classes in fall, winter, and spring terms, ranging from disciplines like Tai Chi, yoga, drawing, knitting, cooking, computers, and many more. This year is a very special year for MALT, as it is fundraising to purchase the building it has been headquartered in for the past 10 years. Listen next as Jonna Naylor, Executive Director of MALT, gives us the history of this unique place and the programs that they offer. Is your right brain in need of flexing its muscle? We're sitting here at the headquarters of Mount Airy Learning Tree with Jonna Naylor.
Jonna.
But Jonna, yeah. Okay.
Jonna like Donna. It's a half bubble off level. It works, though.
You're the executive director?
I am.
Okay.
I am.
So tell us, tell our listeners a little bit about MALT.
The Learning Tree's been in existence for 28 years, going on 29, I guess. Its first classes were held in 1981. Started out with 17 classes, and now we're up to running like 300 classes a term, three times a year, so it's pretty exciting. It is a nonprofit that was founded by Barbara Bloom and a lot of other good folks in the neighborhood. East and West Mount Airy neighbors were both heavily involved in the foundation of MALT. And its purpose is for neighbors to get to know each other. Neighbors teaching neighbors is one of our bylines. And so it's always been something that the neighborhood embraced from the very beginning. And it's got its own little special magic where people from all over come and get to know each other and have a great time together, and everybody goes away with smiles on their faces. So
how does it work exactly? You say it's neighbors getting to know each other. Mm-hmm. And I assume that neighbors come to teach?
Well, neighbors, people in the neighborhood send in proposals, and the staff looks through them, and we pick out the ones that we think people will have interest in, and we put them in the catalog. And then other neighbors sign up for them. So in some ways, it's a big community hub where people find each other. Connectivity in a lot of ways happens through the Learning Tree. Even if people miss a class, if they call back up a month later and say, hey, I saw this thing, I had a question, we'll try to put them in touch with the teacher so that maybe they can get information about said subject. So it really is kind of a connective networking tissue throughout the neighborhood, and it gives teachers, entrepreneurs, local artisans, it gives all those kind of people a great venue to spotlight what their skill set or their wares, if you will, might be. Whether it's being good with computers and being able to teach people how to do Word or Photoshop. Mike Zykowski up at Profiles in Chestnut Hill does a Photoshop Elements class for us where people can come in and work with Mike and find out basic details. We have the same kind of thing that happens all over Mount Airy and Germantown. And we love that we use locations. We take people into churches, the Unitarian Church on Lincoln Drive. We do classes at FUNCOG. We have done classes at Center in the Park. People go into buildings, Lutheran Theological Seminary, it goes on and on and on. We have maybe 30 different community centers and churches and locales and businesses all over town. Fabrics on the Hill, it just goes on and on. People can go through those doors and maybe they wouldn't normally do that because, you don't just pop up at Lutheran Theological Seminary. You think, well, if I'm not a seminary student, what business? But they're actually huge contributors to the community. They open up their campus and their facility for all kinds of community events. So it's those kinds of places that have made MALT possible. And the neighbors, teachers actually get paid to teach for the Learning Tree. But in the beginning, it was more out of a love for whatever their subject was because they couldn't be guaranteed that there might be more than four or five or six students. And so there wasn't a whole lot of money, especially in the beginning, involved in the operation, especially for staff. But all of that has grown up. Now we have consistent enrollments. I would say maybe 70-75% of our classes actually run, which is a great percentage to have going every semester. We have lots of fun happening throughout the neighborhood, people meeting and enjoying each other and learning tons of new skill sets, from simple things like sewing and knitting and computer classes to more elaborate crazy things like rowing the Schuylkill, horseback riding.
What are some of the most popular classes?
Oh, wow. Our Learn to Swim and our Water Aerobics classes, Ebony DeBrest is our instructor along with Gary Smith, and they do a wonderful job, and those fill up almost every time for adults and kids. We added kids, I guess it's been 4 years ago now. And so we've got lots of kids we're teaching to swim up at Chestnut Hill College, that makes my heart warm. I love that. Let's see, what else is really popular? Oh, wow, all of our dance classes rock the house. The language classes always fill up. Tons of arts and crafts classes do really well, whether it's jewelry making or, like I said earlier, knitting, sewing, that kind of thing. Painting, learn to play guitar almost always fills up. Italian, French, Spanish. We had to increase often. We'll add a class for some of these things. Some things have limited seating, like rowing, horseback riding. They can only take four or five, horses is like five or six, I think, and rowing is maybe 10. Computers, where there's limited seating, those frequently fill up. When we can, we do another section. But in some instances, we have limited space, like with rowing and horseback riding, you're lucky to be able to get on a dock down there at Boathouse Row ever. And so we can't always expand our times just because we have limited access to some of the big toys in the neighborhood. But at least we have access, which is new and different and fun. It's one of the things I'm proudest of that the Learning Tree has done, is it kind of kicked open the door to Joe Blow for a lot of the things that used to be really hard to... When I first moved to Philly, I would say, hey, how can I get on a horse in the Wissahickon? I grew up in Texas and riding horses, and it seemed like a natural fit. And yet everybody was like, oh, well, you can't. And I was like, what do you mean you can't? I see horse poo, What do you mean you can't? But you couldn't. There just wasn't much public access for horseback riding or for rowing. And now we have that. So it's something that MALT's been able to do.
And I imagine that it's a matter of cost, too. But you're able to provide these classes for a reasonable price. How does that happen?
because MALT's a nonprofit, many of the locations are willing to work with us on rental fees. And rather than charging more commercial rates, they'll give us a nonprofit rate. In some instances, we can work interesting trade outs for ad space or whatever. The teachers teach not on a flat fee, but on a percentage basis. So if the class goes well, they do really well. If they get lower numbers, they don't do as well. They take the ride with us, and because they're willing to take that risk, it makes MALT financially stable in that regard. We don't have lots of ups and downs because we're having to pay out a big fee on a class that only got five or six people. So it kind of keeps it stable. I think it's because the folks who founded the Learning Tree were really smart about how they set it up. And all I've done is stay in their tracks, if you know what I mean. They laid down a good rut for me, and I've tried to just crawl up in the middle of it and stay there. So.
And you guys have been around for 28 years.
Uh-huh.
After 28 years, you have decided to purchase your headquarters, which is located at the intersection of Porter and Green Street. What led to that decision?
Well, I guess, to be really honest, it started with kind of a tragic beginning. Our landlady upstairs passed away. Mm. Ethel Thomas and her husband had lived here and run the pharmacy on this corner for years and years and years. Once they sold the pharmacy business, Ethel stayed upstairs, and she rented the space below. It was Carpathia's African Attire and Bookstore for a while. I think it was a couple of other things. And then the Learning Tree back in July of 99 moved in, and we've been here ever since. It became our home. We've got a great little building that's the right size for us. I don't know if you've heard any banging around upstairs, but there's actually a cute family. Mm-hmm. Matt and Gina live up there with their two boys, and it's a situation where the building is just the right fit. It's not too small. It's not too big. We do some classes here, but we're not buying the building to do classes. We're buying the building because we've been here for 10 years, and in the first 18 years, we kind of bounced all over the neighborhood from one church basement to another. And people didn't really know where to go to find MALT all the time. Not everybody, anyway. And so we feel like we've come to a place where we're very visible. We have real roots on this corner. And that it would be a shame for us to, if the building got sold to someone else and we had to move, we thought that would not be the best thing for the Learning Tree. Also, thankfully, we struck a deal with the owners that we think is a good deal that we can afford. And because of the apartment upstairs, if we can fundraise enough money, it will make it so that it's kind of self-sustaining. We still will have to pay rent to ourselves in some sense, but over time, that amount will decrease, and then it'll just be where the apartment upstairs pays for the taxes and things like that, and the upkeep. And so it will basically be like most things with MALT, self-sustaining. You know, we're not grant-driven. For the most part, we don't go out and ask people for donations or money or go to big places asking for grants. We don't hit up the businesses on a regular basis. A lot of the nonprofits in the community have to survive off that kind of generosity from the community. Not that it's a bad thing. It's a great thing. But we're really proud of the fact that we're fee-driven. We're self-sustained. What people pay for the classes covers all of the cost here at the Learning Tree, from my salary to putting out the catalog to covering the insurance, the rent here on the building. All of that gets covered by those little $29, $19, $59 fees that we do. So we want to keep it that way. And we think if we do this with the building now, that it will only help maintain that for the next 30 years. So it's going to be a really great financial stability thing that the community, temporarily, we're having to go and ask people for money just in the short run, but we think that once we've done this, that it's going to make it so that that probably won't be something that's needed in a big way ever. Occasionally we may do a, you know, 30th, 40th, 50th anniversary, like we put a mosaic up on Lovett Library. Mm. Well, that's a special project, so occasionally, once every 5 or 10 years, we might do something like that. I can't say we would never come back and ask anybody for a donation again. But for the most part, It's not something we do on a regular basis, which in some ways has made it a real challenge. We didn't have a big list to go to. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have a pattern of, there was no rut. I was rutless, and it made it quite interesting for the first for the start of our capital campaign. It was.
And when did your capital campaign?
It's basically from October to October, so we'll be going until October 10.
2010?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We've gotten a lot of love like that, not just from our teachers, and they've been extremely supportive, donating auction items. It's going to be a great auction when we get to October 2010. That'll be our big final event. But the community as a whole, again, when it first started, we'd never done anything like this, and I didn't know if people would think we were crazy to want to buy our building or if they would be supportive. And it's been a resounding yes, we think this is a great thing for the Learning Tree to be doing. We love having the Learning Tree in the community, and we very much want to support you. And so it's been a lot of fun having that happen. At times it's been a bit overwhelming, having all that love coming at us. It has been. It's just kind of like, whoa!
What kind of other fundraising events are you guys putting on?
Well, let's see, after the malt ball in April, we do an occasional house party where people can come and have a great time in the evening, and we show some videos, malt retro videos, a new video we've done, and we also have a historic house tour. We're going to partner with Germantown Historic Society and do a historic house tour probably in September. The final date has not been completely set, but we think it'll be late September on a Sunday. And we're going to have Old German Township represented in this house tour. We'll get like three houses in Germantown and three in Mount Airy and three in Chestnut Hill. And people can come in and see some of the great old estates and houses that this community offers. I know I drive by them all the time and think, ooh, it'd be fun to see inside, and you know, you hardly ever get to. And so we're going to make that happen. And let's see, besides the house tour, the big final auction in October, we've got Canadian Mountain Holidays has given us a trip for two that we're going to be auctioning off. It's a $5,000 value trip to Canada to go heli hiking again. We also have a week at Cape Cod. We have a Vermont house, vacation house. Those are kind of the bigger ticket items. Then we have lots of really cool stuff, like Sarah Bonds is making a quilt. David Schaff drew a line drawing, an architectural rendering of the Learning Tree here, and we're going to have that to offer off. Marcia Jones is going to do a painting for us, and lots of other people. I don't have a list in front of me right now, and we're just getting started on gathering all that stuff, but that gives you an idea. Nima offered to do a meal at someone's home. She's one of our chefs. She does Indian cooking, and she's going to come to someone's home and cook a meal for four.
Nice.
So that kind of stuff. It's going to be really a great, great thing with lots of a wide variety of things for people to come bid on and take away really outstanding bargains. So that's what we're excited about.
Nice. Besides teaching classes, people come and take classes. What has been, I guess, the allure for people? Why are they so invested in malt? Like, I've taken classes through malt before, and I've taken classes at other, I guess you would call them community-based learning centers, but I actually enjoy the instruction better here at MALT. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I just love hearing you say it. You want to repeat it? I don't know why that is. I think it's because I call it grace. I call her grace. Occasionally, one of the staff will make a mistake, and we won't get a key to a teacher for a location. And somebody in the group standing on the stoop will say, oh, my house is two blocks from here. Let's go to my house. That's grace. That's people who actually want the class. And I think because MALT is so willing to give grace that we get that back. And whether you want to call it yin-yang, whether you call it grace, have your own name for it. But I think that people really do buy in on the ground level. They think that they're as much a part of the class as the teacher is. And it's true. It's really true. I guess the other thing that might play into it is right here in the neighborhood. It's very organic in that way. And I think that people understand that the Learning Tree's purpose isn't to make tons of money, but to kind of break even every year and make sure that we do keep our classes just as affordable as we possibly can. One of the things we talk about with this capital campaign is that we wanted to really work hard and go out and raise the money so that we didn't have to impact on fees in any way. And it looks like that, you know, that's really going to come to pass. We haven't, I would say in my 10 years here, I remember raising prices maybe twice, and it's like $5. You know? And that's for like a $79 class up to $84, you know, or maybe from $79 to $89, that kind of thing. We took our $15 classes to $19, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when we do little incremental raises, it's because everything's gone up around us, rental fees and whatnot, postage, catalog costs, and so we have to occasionally bump them up just a little bit to keep that break-even thing happening. But possibly that's part of why people buy in so, is because they know the teachers are really doing it because their heart's in it, not because they're trying to make tons of money. Mm-hmm. And they know that the organization is in it because its heart is in it, not because it's trying to make tons of money. And so I think that's part of why the capital campaign's been successful to date, because people are willing to give us whatever they can, be it $5 or $10, which is great. We've gotten lots of smaller donations, and that's really helped us get the first 60,000 or so in that we have.
Nice. And speaking of donations, while we encourage people to come out and support the events if they can't, is there another way for them to donate?
Oh, you bet. We have a webpage called MakeThisOurHome.org. And you can go there. We have a poster that Nikki Tozer created. See, this is just something out of the blue. This is a lady who's taught mock classes for us. She works up at the photo workshop at the corner of Willow Grove and Germantown Avenue. She's a photographer. And she just came to me and said, Jonna, I want to make a poster that you can use for the fundraiser, for the capital campaign. So she went around and she took pictures of all, not all, but about 90 of the signs and businesses all over Mount Airy, from Tiffin and Fino's to McMenamin's, the, you know, more obvious ones. But we have a poster now that we're selling for $20 each. You can go on the webpage, get a cool poster, and half of that comes straight to the Learning Tree for a donation for Make This Our Home. So there's lots and lots of ways, from donating things to the silent auction to going there. We also have just a donate button where you can put down $5, $10, $5, $10, $1,000, whatever. hey, girl can dream.
Right.
You can make cash donations. Well, I guess it won't be cash. It'll be on a credit card if you go to our webpage. But you know what I mean. There's a button where you can just donate money to us, or you can actually purchase a poster, purchase a raffle ticket. You can buy a ticket to the malt ball, or you can let us know that you want to come to one of our house parties, and we'll wine and dine you to get your check. So whatever version works for you, we're down with.
And the webpage?
The webpage is mountairylearningtree.org, and you can go there. We'll have our new spring catalog loaded in a couple of days. And you can go there and click on the catalog and see all the classes. There's some fun ways to look at them, either by subject matter, which would be like money, arts and crafts, words and music, health and exercise, mind and body, those kinds of things. Or you can click on by date. Late in the semester, like if you wanted to see what hadn't happened in March yet, clicking on by date is the way to go. It's better even than a print catalog, because you can see just the things that haven't happened yet in March. So the website is a wonderful place to go. You can see what's happening with the Make This Our Home events, calendar of events for what we're doing, and special featured events are also focused on there, and our catalog, mm-hmm. our classes.
And if people want to get in contact with you guys?
You can reach us at our phone here at the office Monday through Friday from 9 to 2. The phone number is 215-843-6333. That's 843-6333. And again, our office hours are Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can leave a voicemail if you call after 2. We'll return your call either way. And you can also reach us by email, info@mountairylearningtree.org.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for coming by.
No problem.
Community teaching community, that's what it should be all about. Again, the Mount Airy Learning Tree can be reached by visiting www.MountErieLearningTree.com. I should also mention that yours truly will be teaching a class through MALT called Community News Reporting beginning on May 8th. Both right and left side of the brain thinkers are welcome. Speaking of community news reporting, 2 weeks ago, the Media Mobilizing Project held its first fundraiser to basically raise capital to keep its efforts of combining media making with social organizing afloat. Talk about left brain, right brain thinking in action, right? Anyway, I was invited to serve on the host fundraising committee and attended the shindig, which was held in downtown Philadelphia. Listen next as two young MMP supporters describe what the organization has meant to them, both in words and in song.
Welcome everybody, my name is Miguel Andrade and I am proud to welcome you all to the first annual MMP Sustainer Celebration!
Miguel Andrade, y quiero darles la bienvenida a la primera celebración de sustentadores de MMP.
Alright, so I'm going to be speaking a little bit about what MMP means to me, and it's going to be a little bit cheesy, but you know, that's how it is.
Entonces yo voy a hablar un poquito acerca de lo que significa para mí MMP, y puede ser que sea un poco sentimental, pero así va a ser nomás.
So, to me, MMP has given me a purpose. And when I say that, it means that by being a part of MMP, I was able to find out that I have a passion for video making, but more importantly, a passion for reporting on what's going on in the city and the surrounding areas.
Entonces, para mí, MMP me da un propósito. Y ese propósito ha sido no solamente aprender que tengo una pasión por hacer video, pero también que tengo una pasión por reportar y contar las historias de lo que está pasando en nuestras comunidades.
So, we here at MMP like to say that movements begin with the telling of untold stories.
Entonces nosotros en MMP siempre decimos que los movimientos comienzan con el compartir de las historias no contadas.
And what that means is that everybody has a voice and has the right to be heard. Whether you be students, workers, immigrants, blacks, whites, you name it, you have a voice and you have the right to be heard.
Entonces eso significa que toda la gente tiene el derecho de ser escuchados. No importa quiénes sean, si son estudiantes, trabajadores, inmigrantes, blancos o negros, cualquier persona tiene el derecho de ser escuchado.
And that is why I personally believe that MMP is so important, and that is why I want everybody in this room to sign up to become a sustainer.
Por eso yo creo que MMP es tan importante y por eso también quiero que toda la gente en esta sala se convierta en apoyador, en sustentador de la organización.
So if you have not become a sustainer, you can go right outside. Brian and Kobe are at a table with some computers. And just go out there, sign up, become a sustainer, and most importantly, today is a celebration, so don't forget that, and let's have some fun, everybody! I chose this song because it speaks about a couple of things that I think MMP stands for, love and justice. And so here it goes. I hope you guys enjoy it. The name of the song is Plant Love. So here it goes.
Then you're in too deep. up, give honor, get peace, find justice, no hope. What you sow, that's what you reap. Not love, get love, give honor, get peace, find justice, no hope. What you sow, that's what you reap.
Good job. Thank you.
Mobilizing Project believes that by sharing our stories, we break through the fragmentations of our issues and the isolations of our communities and build the networks necessary to address the root causes of the problems we face. To learn more about their efforts, visit www.mediamobilizingproject.org. You can also check them out every Tuesday and Thursday right here on G-Town Radio. So back to the idea of left and right brain thinking. Recently, I had begun thinking about doing a documentary. I thought about the topic, where I would film it, and even the length of the movie. I thought about every conceivable angle to how it will be produced, then I am now prepared to take it to the next level. The only problem is I don't have the equipment, i.e. a camera, or even the know-how to actually shoot nor edit the film. Now, the logical side of my brain would just put the project on hold until I had purchased the necessary equipment, learned to use a camera, and figured out the editing software. No point in doing it unless I can do it right, right? However, my creative side is telling me to go forth and figure out the rest when I get there. So what is a girl to do? Luckily for me, there is a local solution that meets the requirements of both sides of my hemisphere. Last year, for the first time ever, Philadelphia became the final major city to offer public access television. Much in the same lines as the Media Mobilizing Project, Philly Community Access Channel, or Philly CAM, seeks to provide Philadelphia residents and organizations with the opportunity to communicate with each other through the creation and distribution of non-commercial media. Only on air since October 2009, local residents can watch Philly CAM on Comcast Cable Channel 66 or 966 or Verizon Fios Channel 29 and 30. Moreover, residents soon will have an opportunity through Philly CAM to not only learn how to use the equipment, but to create content of their own right in the Philly CAM studio. Up next, Gretchen Clausen, Executive Director of Philly CAM, breaks down how community access television will work here in Philadelphia, the future of public access, and the benefits of membership to Philly CAM.
in 2008 was that the Mayor Michael Nutter and City Council President Anna Burnham appointed board members to kind of run the corporation. They're made up of journalists, folks who work in nonprofits, community organizers. There's a reverend from West Kensington Ministries. So it's a really kind of interesting and diverse group of folks who are the board. And it was kind of with them that we kind of came up with our mission for PhillyCam, and that's to assist Philadelphians in the creation and distribution of non-commercial media and to provide residents and nonprofits access to media tools and training and facilitate interaction between diverse communities. So that's our mission. And the ways that we intend on kind of fulfilling that mission are kind of multi, you know, is both through the channel, but more importantly through the actual physical location that we open. For right now, we don't have a space yet. We're still on a search. I had been spending a lot of time and have found a location, but now we're having to start over. And I can answer that. The goal really, though, is to be having some place where people can convene, you know, within the next 2 to 4 months. So whether that's going to be our permanent space or it's going to be an interim space, that will be somewhere where some of the other colleagues and folks that I'm bringing on to be part of the staff for the camp will be working. But it's also where we'll have the beginning of equipment packages of cameras and microphones and tripods and lighting equipment, and we'll be able to start doing trainings. And then folks can come and check out equipment and hopefully have some access to post-production. We're really trying to make the barrier very low for folks to get involved. But for folks to take advantage of the equipment and training, we are asking that everybody does become a member of the station. But once you're a member, and I'll go through that a little bit, you get a whole bunch of benefits and stuff. I just wanted to give people a little sort of general sense of where is PhillyCam kind of now nationally, and just so folks understand that there's public access channels all around the country. Philadelphia was very late in the game coming in, but now we're joining this very robust network of over 3,000 PEG access channels, and PEG is public, educational, and government. Here in Philadelphia, the public is us, public access, not public broadcasting. And then the government is the city government channel, which is 64. And then there's a bunch of different educational channels. There's LaSalle has one, Drexel has one, Temple is getting their channel back, and then the school district has their channel. So that's sort of the landscape that is the paid access channels. And it's kind of amazing if you think about it, but if you look at all these 3,000 channels around the nation, the amount of programming that they produce is, you know, rivals that of all the major networks. And if you really think about it, it's potentially the largest television network in the world. So there's this interesting movement that's happening now in access where it's trying to look at us not, I mean, our strength is that we're sort of hyper-local and that we really are about representing what's happening here in Philadelphia, but there could be things that resonate in other cities and vice versa, so that we can now become hopefully part of this content sharing network, so that if there's a, you know, if somebody, you know, has made a, you know, here in Philadelphia is making a show about fighting home foreclosures, and that sort of, that could potentially resonate in a city, you know, in Chicago, well then, there's a file, we're looking at creating amongst access centers around the country a file sharing network to be able to share that programming. So you have an opportunity as a producer to not necessarily have your work shown just here in Philadelphia, but also around. The beauty of public access is kind of like the last bastion of free speech that you would have on kind of on television. Anyone who wants to kind of become a member and create programming can do that. They can come with the idea, and it's not a matter of me, the executive director, making a decision or determining whether I feel like that program should be on the channel or not. So long as people are kind of meeting the very basic kind of guidelines that the show is not commercial. On the programming submission form, we have sort of the things that you know, that there's a kind of a basically an agreement that producers can sign when they come in, and it's you know, basically it has to meet your, just your minimal technical standards. You know, so if you can hear it, you know, you can see it, it's in focus. It can't be commercial. You have to, be clear that you have all the clearances and the permissions to use the music or different things that are in the program. And then there's also just a little content needs to be flagged. We need to know if there is material that is in an adult nature. But anything that kind of falls into things that is not considered protected speech, and it kind of goes into here, programming that is not falling into consistently protected speech and raises serious risk of liability on the part of the CAM. And this may include but not limited to libel, slander, unlawful invasion of privacy, and obscene material. And so this is the one thing that kind of difference that makes public access different than the public broadcasting or any is that there's a lot more that's permissible. And it will get messy. I mean, in some ways that's the beauty of it. And that was a big sticking point in this whole battle over all these years to actually get this happen, because there was this real concern and fear in amongst our elected officials that there would be hate speech and that there would be pornography on the channel. And basically what we've seen and kind of looking at examples and following the lead of the access centers that are all over the country is that good speech pushes out bad speech. The more opportunities you have for people to kind of express themselves, that makes for a more diverse kind of environment. And there are laws. There are laws that you can follow if somebody does kind of abuse this and kind of overstep the lines. And ultimately, there's been very few cases of any of this kind of the objectionable material. And lots of times, it's really more the commercial content that is more problematic than any of the other things. So we're still developing these programmatic policies, and we'll be putting them up on our website so people can read through them. The board has been working on them. And to me, it really, I feel like I'm doing my job when we actually do start to have some of these not that I want them to happen tomorrow, but when we do start having, kind of conversations and people are challenged by the content, and then I think the opportunity as well, then that, give you an opportunity to then answer. You know, if you are upset about a particular show or a particular thing that's on there, well then you too have an opportunity to then create your own program. And get your point of view out. So that's, as I mentioned earlier, we've got about, I would say at least 40 hours of new programming on the channel every week. And during the day, it's kind of the same loop. So if you turn on during the day, it's the same thing as over and over. But starting from like 6 o'clock until 11 on weeknights, and then really all day on Saturdays and Sundays, there is new programming. Like I mentioned, the Focus on Fitness, they have a new show every 2 weeks that goes on, and we're showing a Real Black TV, we're showing a program called Popsicle Toys, which is curated by an animation professor at the University of the Arts. It's a program of like short, live action and animated short films. What we don't have yet is we have some news and information, but it's really more long form documentaries. And I know that there are a couple projects in the works wanting to kind of get together like a monthly or a bi-weekly news program, and that'll all be obviously more easy to do once we actually have a studio and people can kind of come in and do live programming and do that. But for now, the work that's being done is more labor intensive because it's all being done like off-site, and is Philly CAM is only going to be, I think, as strong as the constituencies of members, and we wanted a membership because that's not necessarily, not every access center has paid memberships. Like, they don't necessarily require that, but we really felt like it was important for us to kind of build like a constituency of people, and that as becoming a member, you're really feeling like you're part of something, and that you're investing in it, and that we're in turn going to invest in you. And one of the main things that members can do, besides contributing content and promoting the channel and kind of being there, is actually they have a role in the governance of the organization. We're a nonprofit, and as I mentioned, we have a board of directors that was first appointed by the mayor and city council, but now is entirely elected by the membership. So, coming up in, if you go on the website right now, you can see the slate for the board elections, and all members can vote for the board. Actually, Leslie is a candidate. So, is running for the board. So we're really glad you're here tonight. And I think that's something that's really important, because it's really from the membership that you have a say in kind of how the organization is run and making sure that we're sticking to our mission and staying to the plan. So that to me is important. And I think that, you know, as they mentioned at the end of the video, the Waynesville video, which was made in California, and they said how 30 stations had lost their funding and closed in California. Public access will continue to be under threat. I mean, we fought for almost 30 years to get it, but we're going to continue to have to show that we are a vital resource to the community. Actually, today in, I think it was on C-SPAN, the Comcast and NBC were testifying on behalf of sort of about their merger. And there definitely are concerns in the PEG Access community that this pending merger of Comcast and NBC Universal could have adverse effects on public access, because they're going to have all this content that they're going to want to show. And that means that they're going to want more channels. You know, so then that means that they're going to want to push public access all over the digital tier. Like right now, you can see us on Comcast 66, which is in the must carry. So if you have the most basic cable subscription, you will be able to see public access.
Without a digital cable box.
Without a digital cable box. So we are in we're just like the analog basic must carry. The second channel that is ours is 966, and that's on the digital tier. So there you do have to have like a digital subscription or whatever.
And pay more money to see it.
So but we really fought very hard to keep that channel.
When will it be available, or will it be available on satellite television?
Well, it will never be available on satellite. Mm. Satellite is not the difference is that cable companies negotiate their agreements city by city, kind of community by community, and satellite is just one for the whole country. Mm. And so there are some, I guess you would say, non-commercial or public service channels on satellite. There's like Free Speech TV, there's Link TV, there's a couple of them, and they're way up in the 900s. But our channel specifically won't be on satellite. And I know it's an issue because there's a lot of people in Philadelphia that are satellite, you know, subscribers. I actually became a cable subscriber, you know, when I started doing this job, and until then I had satellite. So the way that we're going to be working to counteract that is, and just making it available to more people who live outside of Philadelphia, is that hopefully by the summer we'll have some web presence. So you'll be able to see some of the programs maybe as video on demand, and then also, I don't know if we'll be streaming all the time or just streaming sort of limited, you know, live programs, or, you know, we're still trying to explore how we're going to do that, but that's definitely something that's really important to us. And ultimately, I mean, a lot of ways it's all kind of, you know, converging together. So, you know, people, I think, are getting more accustomed to watching television on their computer. So, so that's the best answer I can give to that. So, people are asking, you know, how you can get involved. We talked about becoming a member, a little bit about submitting a program. The way folks are giving us programs now is they're sending them to a submission form, and they're giving them to me on DVD. That's really the easiest format for us to get them on. A DVD with no menu, just the program. And then we can also take them as MK2 files. That's, you know, something that will ultimately be helping people understand how to do and how to compress their video. That's the best way for us to take them right now. Once, maybe a year from now, when we're in our facility and everything hooked up, people will be able to upload their videos over the internet if they have access to a high-speed connection, so that like people don't even necessarily, I mean, I want people to come to the center, but if somebody is like far away or whatever, they can upload through the internet.
Are there still any requirements regarding local origination content?
We have a very extensive operating agreement with the City of Philadelphia that basically sets various kind of thresholds and things that we have to meet. And I'm embarrassed to say I don't have a committed to memory, but I believe it's somewhere in like 20 hours a week of like local origination. So now, one thing that we're trying and seeing how it's going to work is that I mean, our commitment really is to Philadelphia, but as I mentioned, there's a lot of really great programs that are happening in other cities and that we could get access to. We could be showing, if we wanted to, we could be showing Democracy Now!, we could be showing things from Lynn TV, we could be, there's a service called Peg Media where you can like download files from other access centers, and that would be able to kind of, in this startup phase, help us kind of fill out the schedule a little bit. But what we've been trying to do is get local sponsors of those programs. So then that way, there's somebody in Philadelphia that says, you know, I want to see Democracy Now! And I will get the permission from them, and you can show it. So that way, it's just kind of showing that it's not just, you know, it's really the vision of the citizens and the residents of Philadelphia that's what they want to see on TV, it's not me, you know. But I think overall, the work that's up there, right, has been really exciting. And I think in a lot of ways, because Philadelphia hasn't had access, there's been a lot of organizations, like Scribe Video Center, like the Media Mobilizing Project, like the, a couple organizations working with young people, Asian Arts Initiative, or Taller Puerto Ricano, that have developed their own media programs. And so they are making work. A program from Mind TV, Philadelphia Stories, was, you know, supporting the work of Philadelphia filmmakers to make, you know, documentaries and short form fiction and animation and experimental films for television. So, you know, there are a lot of people that are already making really interesting work for television. So I think that that's kind of making the channel look really good. Otherwise, I'm supposed to get involved and you take a class. We don't have a class schedule yet, and as I said, we're kind of, I'm hopeful that by the late spring, early summer, we'll actually be in a position where we'll be able to start offering classes. I think the priority will be basic camera training so people can get certified and check out the cameras and be able to, you know, start shooting their programming. We'll be having, and then I think they'll, you know, as we get more technology in the center, you know, the hope is that we'll be having, you know, kind of basic computer classes, like how do you use an app, how do you get online, how do you do this, but then also how do you use Final Cut Pro, how, you know, maybe iMovie first, and then how do you use Final Cut Pro. So, to Azim's question, at some point we will be hosting jobs for instructors. And so that's definitely one way to get involved. Another way to get involved, at a staff level, would be as a producer. I think what we're going to be doing is doing some of our own production. The city is really encouraged and wants Philly Cam to kind of do, you know, a certain number of hours of our own production. So whether that is candidate forums or covering arts and culture events or doing different things, that we will be kind of doing that. And then also, you know, nonprofits and organizations are already really busy and overwhelmed with the work that they have, and so if there's some way that we can sort of help facilitate them doing production, you know, we might be able to make some matches and do it that way. But that's still a program that we're looking to develop. You can volunteer. We have volunteers tonight, and for now we haven't really had. It's going to be in my laptop, so we haven't really had a lot. But now that things are getting busier and we're having these meetings, if you're interested in just kind of being part of what we're doing. We're going to be doing more of these community forums. And then once we actually get in the center, we're a small staff, so we'll need people to help, like, use their phones and just kind of just be there, you know, to kind of staff evening hours and things like that. So there'll be a lot of volunteer opportunities coming up. Well, then, like, just watch the channel. Like, if you see things that you like, or, you know, just actually, if people start emailing me, like, I love the channel, but I can't hear it, then I can start to, like, get that together to get to Comcast. And so the most basic membership is $25 for an individual. It's $15 for students and seniors. And then it goes into an organizational membership, and those basically being $30 for organizations with budgets under $50,000, and then it kind of scales up. You'll get a credit towards the class, which will be starting later in this year. You'll get free access to Philly Cam's cameras, the editing suites and studios. I did this PowerPoint before I actually found out that I lost the space that I found, so I'm hoping that by summer 2010 we'll have the editing suites, but, and I'm still going to speak tonight, but tonight you may, don't hold me to it.
Information about Philly Cam, please visit www.phillycam.org. There was a lot of really good information there, some that I am hoping to put into good use once the Philly Cam studio is officially open. Matter of fact, make sure you support all the organizations we heard today, from the Mount Airy Learning Tree, which again is available at www.mountairylearningtree.com, to the Media Mobilizing Project, again at www.mediamobilizingproject.org. On a final note, one side of the brain is not better than the other, but rather should be viewed as a complement to the other half. Thus, a whole person needs both sides to fully realize their full potential. The keys here are striving for balance, integration, and moderation in all things at all times. I have learned that I can't just be a thinker, but I have to be a creative thinker. And likewise, whatever actions that come out of my thought cannot be so stifled and predictable that it doesn't allow growth or innovative solutions from outside of the box. I would like to share with you more about ways in which I seek out balance, but I have a garden to plant, followed up by some heavy focused writing and planning. I hope you have enjoyed today's show. If you want to hear it again or check out other great episodes of People, Places, and Things, visit www.peopleplacesthingsradio.com. I hope you will join me again next week. And until next time, I am your host, Shireen Ball, wishing you a great day. Peace.